Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Provincial State of Mind with myself, Owen Harrison, Jeff Neville and Tom Savage. This is a podcast focused on all four Irish provincial sides in both the URC and European competitions. We discuss what happened the previous weekend, what we can expect from each province in their upcoming games, as well as any major off-field news. Right, Jeff, how was your weekend in Italy?
Oh, absolutely unbelievable. Like, I fully recommend, I know it's a cost of living crisis at the moment and the economy is shit and nobody has any money. But if you can go, it is absolutely unbelievable. Of all the away games I've been to, it's up there with one of the best. And it's purely and utterly. Well, the rugby was great, don't get me wrong. Rome's a lovely city. But the fans are the absolute crack. Like, they're just so nice. Like, first off, like, you even have, like, you know, Ireland's call at the start of the game. The absolute shithousery there was so funny. Like, people in the crowd were wetting themselves laughing and like people were trying to sing along and you're just like holding notes like for ages that kind of way. But even like there was these like four old Italian lads behind me and they were crying laughing. They were like, oh, the song, it ruined. They obviously said it in a better accent than I did, like. But then the Italian anthem started, and man, like, I was in Millennium Stadium or the Principality 4 years ago when Wales won that slam in the last game against Ireland. And I thought that it was the best anthem I've ever heard live until I heard that Italian one. It was unbelievable. I couldn't even bring myself to throw the eggs that I'd brought. Like, it was unreal, to be fair. And then, I mean, the game itself, like, you know, lent itself to the occasion. Afterwards, the crack was unbelievable. Like, it is genuinely up to, I can't wait to go back. Like, you know, people, like, we always say it, you know, people always say it, oh, I'll definitely go back there now in the future. I'd love to go again. But like, 100%, I have to do it again. Like, it was so good. And I've been like an absolute pothole since. All I've done is talk about it. You know, that kind of way, like, I'd be in a shop and I'd be like, buying a bottle of water or something like that. And I'd be like, did you hear that I went to Italy? And they're like, sir, I don't know who you are. And I'm like, oh, okay, never mind.
Agua.
Agua. Agua presente. What? This is bread. Yeah, but like, literally all I ate for 3 days was white bread, like pizzas, you know, your focaccias or what is that what they're called?
Focaccia.
Or focaccias.
Gotcha.
It was just unreal. Like, it was a great weekend. The only thing I regret is we flew into Milan and we flew out of Milan. So, like, it's just a very long Sunday, if that makes sense. So, like, I think I'd bite that bullet in the future. I absolutely would bite that bullet in the future because it's a very long Sunday. But again, you know, cost of living crisis, it all counts. But, oh, great weekend. Sorry, I'll stop going on about it. I'm sure I'll bring it up again at some point. How was your weekend?
Not bad. Back in the garden this weekend. Just trying to get a couple of things done. Trying to get turn what is now. It's no longer grass on the lawn. It's more moss than anything else.
Yeah. What feeder do you use on the lawn?
Fertilizer.
Yeah, like lawn feed or grass feed. Like, do you use anything or
nothing specific? Whatever's in the garden center. Yeah. Slow release. Yeah.
I'm in the look now for one myself, just to get the green back up and the patchy areas fixed. But I'm researching. I'm in the research phase.
I like sulfate of iron.
Oh yeah.
Get the moss out and get a bit of color back into it.
Yeah. It's a wonderful time of the year.
Lots of work. I have to get the scarifier at it next. That's the next big one.
Yeah, and you have to just get it ready for, I suppose, spring fight season training.
Well, that's it. I mean, you don't want a bad lawn when you have all the kids out there fighting.
No, you can't. Like, you'd be the laughing stock of the neighborhood.
Exactly.
You'd be laughed out of fight club.
Have to have the place looking nice for when RTE News come down.
Time investigates, but he does have a lovely lawn. Tom's not here tonight. He's at a Humpty Dumpty lookalike contest. He said to say hello, but I'd rather not. So
yeah,
we just move on without him, I think.
I think so. We'll start with the that game that you were at in Italy.
Did I mention I went to Italy? I was actually at the game. Did I mention that?
I'm not sure you did.
Yeah, so sure just did. To avoid any confusion, Jeff was at that game. Yeah. I was there in Italy.
And you saw Ireland beat Italy 34-20. As you said, the Italians started the shithousery fairly early before kickoff one of the best things I'd seen pre-match for a while now, to be honest. Romani was giggling away.
Yeah, he took the words out of my mouth. I only saw it afterwards and he's just smiling. Like, it was so funny. It was one of those occasions where, like, you can't even be mad. Do you know that kind of way? You're like, this is so deliberately slow. It's gone past the annoying. It's into the funny. Like, it's okay, fair play. Like, well done.
I was like, what's wrong with this? And then, because they started off the singing, and then it was like, you could hear as the camera was going past to the microphone, players were at different parts of the song. So different players standing next to each other were at completely different parts of the song at the same time. And you're like, what is wrong with people? What's going on here? And then suddenly you hear the music and it's gone dragging the arse out of it the whole way. It was just perfect.
It's like
perfect start. Like,
do you know primary school kids when they sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat, and someone sings the first line and then someone else, you know, starts the first line when they start the second, and you just have that medley the whole way down? It was something like that as well. Like, oh, it was like, fair play to the Italians. It was brilliant. Like,
I have to congratulate them for that. Ireland got off to a very good start. Started there. Was it within 30 seconds they had James Lowe dropping the ball over the line? And then within about a minute of that, it was James Ryan came back to score in the same corner. Yeah. It was a great start to it. They showed the attacking intent there, but it and given the number of changes that Ireland had, it was a solid win for them. But the Italians did look very good.
The Italians look brilliant. Like, that first half, I'm especially, well, I don't mean to sound in any way condescending or anything like that at all here, like, but I was especially impressed with Casey and Byrne with their game management in that first half, considering the sheer utter chaos of that first half, like, if that makes sense. Like, they handled it really well. And Italy were well worth their salt. But, like, put it this way, like, at halftime, I was kind of sitting there and I was like, you know, at the stadium because I was there. And I was kind of sitting there and I was like, how is there only 7 points in this game? Like, what's happened here that there's only 7 points in this? And then I thought, like, okay, Ireland will pull away. But I mean, like, you're looking at 67 odd minutes gone, 70 minutes gone. There's still only 7 points in it. Like, there was four in it at one stage, wasn't there?
I think it was four in it at one stage. I mean, I think the intercept try just before halftime, that was obviously the big turning point. There was a 14-point difference, brought it right back down to seven, kept them in the game. But for me, it was the Italians, the way that they attacked with the ball was outstanding. The way that they were able to move the ball to the edge, the way they were able to get their runners lined up, creating the mismatches and the overloads in the wide channels, and then being able to... The one thing that really stood out to me for them was how they hit the line at pace. So they use the passing or whatever to get to the edge, but it's the player who comes on to make the line break. He hits it and accelerates onto the ball so much that he, you know, if he gets through that sort of first tackle or he breaks the line, he's just gone. And it caused Ireland so many, like, you know, Aki and Lowe, I think that they singled them out, and the use of the Italian number eight in the sort of that sort of 13 channel caused absolute havoc for the Ireland defense.
Yeah, the use of Cannone was brilliant. Like, and even off a scrum, I think it was first phase, so Italy went just real wide. It was a left hand scrum, they went to the other side, and off, let's say, the far side, so they folded round, let's say, but off that, Cannone still an option off that, like, off that inside. And it just the way they used him in midfield. Like, there's a lovely angle of a run, just like you said, and it gets to midfield, you know, and it's there's two options running off. Canone is the third, and he just cuts back in and just slices the attack open. But I think I'm going to have to pause for a second. Do you hear that music? Whose music could that be?
Oh, my God.
It couldn't be, could it? Could it be? Could it be? I don't think so. Unless the Humpty Dumpty lookalike contest finished early. Is that Tom? Is that Tom? Thomas Savage?
Let me into this shagging Zoom.
It is.
Let me into this.
Did you win the contest?
Did you win?
Did you win?
Did you win?
Of course I fucking won. Who are you talking to?
We actually haven't cursed yet on this podcast. And you've been here 8 seconds.
Fuck.
8 seconds.
What are you talking about?
Rugby? We were talking about how impressive the certain segments of the media are in terms of hyping up players based on their locality.
Do you know what?
No, I was only joking. We were talking about rugby.
Oh, damn. Damn, I thought we were getting to my favorite topic. The media. The media.
I'm coming in hot. We were talking about the use of Canone in the wider channels in the middle of the pitch.
Oh, good.
If that interests good. You.
Yeah, no, it's all right. It's all right, I suppose.
He thought we were talking about cannelloni or something, I think.
Yeah, no, I prefer that. How long are we into this podcast, by the way?
About 45 minutes, I'd say. We started early.
Fair play.
Yeah.
Fair play. I did, and hopefully, did I miss the Leinster stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, thank God.
Anyway.
Thank God. Get on, Dave. Go on.
Welcome. Where were we on?
Cannelloni.
Italy, yeah. And even attacking those wider channels.
Cannelloni like, playing an ace.
You can... When, like, there was one kick deep and Capuzzo took it and went just ran across the pitch and he did everything you would tell a child who was playing rugby not to do. You'd be like, stop running across the pitch, stop eating up the space. But he just he literally just runs across the pitch and just throws this worldly of a pass to, was it the 12, I think, or 13, or someone anyway, and they just went attacking down. Just went down that blind side, came back for a penalty. But even like that kick that Brex put in at about 60 odd minutes, like if you, I went back and watched it today for Patreon, but it's like the absolute right call. Like the space is out there. The widest defender is Dan Sheehan and he's outside the 15. You know, there's players inside like Brex.
He just made a bags of it.
He just made a bags of it. And the fact that he had a second row probably chasing it didn't help either. Like, it's, you know, if
the second row, then having the temerity, the nerve to be bawling him out of it.
what was it?
What sort of kick was that?
You still put it over my head.
What sort of crossfield kick was that? Was it like, he doesn't even, you do it then?
He doesn't even dive for it. He just kind of watches it bounce and then puts a hand out as it bounces the other way and then like tumbles, gets up, and he's like, ah. And you're like, well, come on. Like,
he was about so easy. You do it.
Like, Hansen came out of that line so quick to hit him that, like, he had, well, it's his own fault. He could have been deeper now, to be fair to him as well. But Hansen just hits him so quick as well. I'd say he had all of a second to kick that ball. But I mean, how that ball went dead, you could have landed a plane in the in-goal area in the Stadio Olimpico. It added an extra 15 meters away from the pitch, almost like it's huge. But no, it was the right kick. And like Italy did attack wide as much as they could. Like, and it was a brilliant game. It was an absolute, to the point where like when there was only 4 points in it, you're kind of thinking to yourself, if Italy do score here again and manage to hold on to it, there'd be a lot of unhappy fans at home. But I'm in for one hell of a night in Rome. And I won't lie, that thought crossed my mind.
You wouldn't have to pay for a plate of plastidine, a plate of plastidine there.
A plate of pasta.
I'm very tired.
How's fatherhood treating you?
Grand. Like billions of people have had children.
I won't bore you with details. So,
you know, it's like, it's great. You know, she cries. She was crying a lot now today. And I was just like, hey, knock it off. But she wouldn't. We had to walk around with her and drive around like the fool mobile, driving around West Limerick.
That was on wheels.
Like absolute fools, the two of us. She's fools made of the two of us. Like, I'm an absolute mug now, totally just. And yeah, but no, it's grand. It's great. She's good crack. She's laughing now. And I'm thinking, are you the smartest baby? Not only in Limerick, not only in Ireland, but the Northern Hemisphere, the world even. Maybe the smartest baby there's ever been. But then again, I realized, you know what? Billions of people have had children. So maybe not. Maybe she isn't. And that's okay.
So what do you think of the balance of the back row?
Well, my daughter was very unimpressed with it anyway.
Do you have a daughter you haven't mentioned?
It's one of those things. It's my new content thing I'm leaning in on. Children.
I don't know if I mentioned, but I was at the game on Saturday.
Oh, were you? Where was that?
It was on over in Rome, yeah. I don't know. Did I not tell you?
I'm not sure. That's actually a completely different country to where you are, where we are now.
It is, yeah. I couldn't drive the car, so I had to take
it. No, you couldn't drive. You would have had to have left straight away after the podcast there last week.
I left after work Friday. I was in the car about an hour. I was like, I'm never going to get there. This is a stupid idea.
I'll just take a plane. They're right there. They go much quicker.
I saw a plane in the sky and I was like, actually, there's a thought.
But like the back row, Ireland's back row balance?
Yeah.
At the start of the game, like, Caelan Doris is a very special player. I wrote this on Twitter earlier to give Leinster fans a bit of a belly rub because they haven't had one in a while. Caelan Doris is very good. He's a very good player. He's a very special player. And I believe that. He is a guy who gives you almost total role coverage in the back row. And what that means is that the way the jobs Ireland usually have the number six doing and the jobs Ireland have doing the eight jersey, he can do both of those really, really well to a very high level. And that is not as common as what it might sound, because every team has different jobs for their six or seven or eight. And Caelan Doris is perfect for that Ireland and Leinster system. And he is kind of like a balancing factor all on his own. But that said, I felt Jack Conan didn't have a great game. It kind of needed a big game, really. Didn't have one, I felt. He looked a little bit off role in that number eight jersey that Caelan Doris does so many different jobs there. They did switch around some of the stuff. Like, typically, the Irish number six does a lot of lineup work. And Peter Manny is normally that guy. But in this game, Caelan Doris was the guy who was mostly in midfield on those five-man Italian lineouts. And Jack Conan was the lineout guy, doing a lot of lifting. I didn't think that suited him either. And he just looked, do you know what it reminded me of? A little bit of that Ireland A game against New Zealand, where Gavin Coombs didn't have a great game because he looked like he was told to go out there and just do a Caelan Doris impression. And he wasn't suited to that. And I think that this was something similar, where Jack Conan was kind of in between roles almost and didn't really do any of them well, and just had a game where just kind of bypassed him a little bit and didn't really hit any markers that I've been able to see so far anyway. They were just like, yeah, that was a good game. But it's an interesting one, because I think Ireland will revert back to the O'Mahony, Van der Fleer and Doris one going forward, unless there's an injury. You can't really blame him either. Like, that's a really good balance, that 6-7-8 of O'Mahony, Doris, Van der Fleer. But it's kind of hard to know what they're going to do with that 20 jersey.
It is. I think if they go, and they should go back to O'Mahony, do you think there's a change in role for James Ryan? Because it seemed to me that James Ryan was carrying a little bit wider and Doris was doing some of the heavy carrying from six.
Yeah, it was. I think Doris can kind of do it all. Like, he can just do, like, you can give him that job and he'll throw his hand to it in a way that very few fellas are able to do to the level he does it. But with James Ryan, I felt that, I think maybe it was specifically to do with Italy. There wasn't necessarily that much tight play for him to be overtly involved in. And the way they split it up, I think, looked really good. But I don't know. Like, I think Italy, on the one hand, I'm not sure if he said this already, are a very good team, but they're a deeply flawed team also. And I don't know, I came away from the game on Saturday, like, Ireland won, which is great. But even with that team, I was like, jeez, like, they shouldn't really have been that close. As good as it played.
I tend to agree. I think there was points in the Ireland attack where it was functional rather than good. I think, and I've said this before, Ross Byrne, very good kicker, very good game manager, did well in those respects, but doesn't carry the ball enough to be a threat to the defence and allows them to drift.
No,
you can scheme around it to get away with it, but it still doesn't work that way.
The attack doesn't really work as fluidly, because I think Sexton, he's 37. I still think he's a more explosive athlete than Ross Byrne. And I completely understand why Ross Byrne is there, by the way. Like, good system fit, understands what Ireland are trying to do from a framework perspective, really good goal kicker most of the time. You know what you're going to get from him. Like, he is like a completely known quantity, which is an actual quite a valuable thing to have in a player. But yeah, I just felt that the attack just became more predictable as the game wore on, once Italy realized that, hang on there now, we can fly into the screen here on this guy because he can't really evade us that much. Like, the intercept try almost is a perfect example of a player rolling the dice on, I'm just going to shoot into the screen, see what happens. And he kind of got there before Ross Byrne did. But like, that's just something I think that like Ireland will live with, because they like what Ross Byrne gives them from a kind of an intangibles, but also what you know he gives you, which is the goal kicking. He can kick well in the Ireland's counter transition scheme. He gets what that job is. And I think overall, like, I think, yeah, I wasn't blown away by him, but I don't think I'd be shocked if he wasn't number 22 against Scotland if Johnny's fit.
Just what you said about shooting into the screen, that's something that I'm surprised we don't see more of at the higher levels, is to have, I'm not saying just go willy-nilly at it, like, but if you're set well, let's say, on touchline in D, you have given the license to someone to tell either side of them, like, I'm just going to shoot on this screen and hopefully it works. If it doesn't, whatever, but you know what I'm going to do, like, and, you know, you can fix it. Because, I mean, we saw Luke McGrath do something like it, like shoot up on that loop there. Was that against the Dragons? Yeah.
I think it was against
the Dragons. And like, yeah. I know it's a little bit different there because it's the 9-roll tracking the 10 and tracking that loop. Like, but just very much like, if you're set in D and you have that set, and it's hard to do at international level because you're playing off rucks that are under 3 seconds, etc. You've enough to be thinking about without, you know, trying to fit this in too. But if you have a little bit of time, just a quick nudge, say, listen, I'm shooting, and just pour through on that screen. And even if you don't get an intercept, maybe you make the tackle or you make a scrag, you slow it down, you upset the system. It's just something I'm surprised we don't see that small bit more of.
Especially with Ireland. Especially because like, Ireland play with so many layers.
Yeah.
Like, I think with a 1-3-3-1, it's a sort of a flatter by default attacking structure, but Ireland don't really play that for the most part. That 1-3-2 with the either one or two players in the white, that has to be, depth has to be built into that. I'm surprised more teams don't do it, but I think Ireland in particular do a good job of punishing you if you come a little bit too far up. Like, Ireland win the gain line so well and in the right areas and then get the really quick ruck recycle, it's quite difficult to shoot as aggressively as maybe. I think if we see Leinster or Ireland getting beaten this season, it'll be with something very similar to that defensively happening.
I think if you look back at that intercept try, I think part of the reason that Italy can go for that is if you identify, and I think they did from the line out, if you identify that it's Ross Byrne coming on the loop on the outside, so he's the outside man coming on the loop, if you know he doesn't have the pace, if that's a different player with specific pace that can burst, and if they break that line, it's gone. It's a definite try. But if you know that it's Ross Byrne, you can almost gamble that the cover defense will get across in time. And I think that's the slight difference with the winger. If they spot the move early enough, as Bruno did when he came in, and you can identify who the man on the outside that's going to be receiving the pass or on the pullback is, you can make that gamble and go for it. If that was Sexton or even Crowley or someone else coming into that, I don't know whether he makes the same decision or not.
No, I think with Sexton, you're worried about
if they hit the gap and go through.
If you try and hit Sexton like that, like as in, he's like he's spry enough for a fella near 40. Like he's spry enough, but he's like he's a very like muscular, explosive player. Even at his age, like. So that's a guy who you don't want to be, you know, trying too much fancy shit with him coming into the screen, because if he takes that ball, like he'll beat you in that collision, and once he's gone, then. Like maybe he won't make the try line, but he will pick that pass because he's one of the most accurate passers in the Six Nations. I mean, same with Ross Byrne actually, and I think that's what kind of makes up for what might be a lack of explosivity for Ross Byrne would be the quality of his passing is quite good, but I just worry about, especially against Scotland, like about how we approach that game, with the injuries that we have. We're looking for some guys to have injuries cleared up. And I think we saw how important Gary Ringrose is defensively to this Irish team. And I will say this, I think some of the criticism that's been there of Bundy Aki, I think, has been way over the top over the last number of days.
Yeah, I just it on
doesn't
that,
reflect
like,
reality.
I mean, like, you're 13. Like, I always think of Conrad Smith back when he was playing with New Zealand. In my mind, he's still probably the best defensive 13 of all time. Like, he was unbelievable. You think of Lokanyo Am for South Africa defensively, like he's a defensive leader. You think of Gael Ficou as well when he's playing 13 with France, defensive leader. Gary Ringrose has been playing nothing but 13 for how long now? So suddenly when you think he's a defensive leader, like he is so set in that role to suddenly just switch him out for a guy who hasn't played that much of 13 at all in
the last number of years.
Oh yeah, a couple of seasons. Mm. Suddenly say you're now filling in that defensive leader role. He did fine. Would Ringrose have done better? Absolutely. But there's a context there. And you can't just say one's not as good as the other. You're like, well, hang on. Why? Like, explain it. There is yeah, a reasoning.
Aki coming in on short-ish notice. Like, you know, he would have known it. He would have had an idea
probably
maybe
Thursday,
from the start
of
the week. You know, from Tuesday
Wednesday.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But like, you know, even then, like he hasn't got a whole lot of rugby under his belt as of late either. You
and
know,
also,
and with the
it's
sort
also
of
a lot of information to suddenly go right, clue into.
But like, especially in Ireland's kicking system, where Ireland kicked the ball, I think it's second most and second longest of any team. Like England are number one, and they were Steve Bortwick team, so they're fucking leathering the ball.
Going to be number one. Forever.
Yeah, we're like, there's no way we're not going to be number one for kicking meters in the Six Nations. We're going to win the kicking meters Grand Slam. And like Ireland are right there with them. So like in that sort of kicking system, and Ireland kicked a lot and kicked long in this game too, like your most important guy is your edge defender, especially on those transition sets. And like it's managing those spaces, but not just on the first phase. It's the second and the third, and then getting into your settled phase play then afterwards. I thought Italy were very, very good at attacking Ireland in those spaces. And because when Ireland kick, they'll split the midfielders. So this is why I think Henshaw and Ringrose are the preferred 12-13, because they give you the same sort of defensive coverage. When other guys go in there, you make do. Like McCluskey and Ringrose, I think, work because Ringrose covers a lot of ground. McCluskey can certainly cover ground, but I wouldn't say as much as Ringrose. But when it's McCluskey and Aki, I think that led to the sort of spacing that they don't, that Ireland's system is uncomfortable with, and gave up a lot of opportunities to Italy on transition, on first, second, and third phase, that I think we don't give up if there's other guys there. But this is why you try and bring guys in and get the minutes to try and see the stuff.
I think there was also that talk like around defensively, like he might have got narrow at times. But I mean, you name an Irish backline at the moment, right? It's either Murray or Jameson Gibson-Park at 9. Sexton, 10. Aki or Henshaw, if he's fit, at 12. You can even, I'd put McCluskey in there now as well, like, but it's Ringrose, 13. But you think, let's just say you take Jameson Gibson-Park, Sexton, Henshaw, Ringrose, and you put how many times they have played together as a backline. And then you go Casey, Byrne, McCluskey, Aki.
They've never played together.
I couldn't find it myself, so I'm afraid to say never. But as far as I know, never played together. And then suddenly people are kind of giving out that they don't have the same cohesion, or they don't have the same. And I know you try and D up the same. I'm not saying you don't, but pictures are important. Pictures you've seen previously. You know what fellas have done inside, like, on your inside or on your outside, you know how they react. Like experience is a big thing. Like, so a lot of that criticism towards Aki, he was poor defensively, etc. I mean, he was fine. He just wasn't as good as a Gary Ringrose, who was in the form of his life.
And plus as well, some of the stuff that Bundy Aki was getting blamed for weren't Bundy's problems at all. Like, I saw a few people blaming him for, there was a break early on in the game where he let, I think it was Ignacio Brex, had Angie Capuoto outside him, and it was Pierre Bruno, I think, on the other side. This is off a line, a scrum free kick. And Aki gave him the outside, and they took it. And they made a good break that, if it wasn't for a great tackle by Hugo Keenan, maybe that's a try, or maybe it's, you know, a 5 meter line or whatever it is. But, like, that wasn't Bundy Aki just deciding to do that. He couldn't step out to guard the space outside and allow Hansen to push out, because McCluskey and Byrne had shot up in a straight line, and they had to turn around in 3D space here to get back across to cover the inside. And in Ireland's defensive system, I think in most defensive systems, if you haven't got inside man cover, like, you can't push out, because then you're just leaving a massive gap. And I think Ireland are very good at managing that. There was an incident as well, right before the Ignacio Brex incident of the crossfield kick to Canone, that break came off a ruck, and Bundy Aki is the pillar. He's guarding the nine. He pushes out on the nine, looks to try and push out on, I think it was, maybe it could have been Canone as well in that moment, but he can't then guard the inside pass, because that went out to the forward. He hit an inside pass. Bundy can't cover all three. The inside man has to cover the inside pass. And that was Ross Byrne, and he missed the tackle. But Bundy got the blame for it, because that's what the 13 is supposed to be doing. I don't know. I just think a lot of the stuff with Bundy was kind of over-exaggerated to a certain extent. Like, I don't know. Like, I felt it was unnecessary. But I think Ireland would have learned a lot from that game. Like, I think you look at the...
You mentioned the depth earlier on, Tom, in terms of the back row. Like, Farrell has stuck almost religiously with the four same players. So he's Omani, Van der Fleer, Doris, and Conan have been sort of the four back row players. Anytime they've been fit and available and it's been a meaningful game, those have been the go-to guys. Conan, as we said, didn't really have a good game. There's been a big push, certainly in the media, for Ryan Baird, and he seems to have been moved away from that sort of, I would call it, I'm not sure they really see him as a second row, as there are a replacement. I think Farrell probably sticks with Henderson and Ryan as starters. Do you think Baird gets the second row spot, or do you think he can push on? Does he dislodge Jack Conan?
I don't see him dislodging Conan. Like,
I don't see him at the moment dislodging the second row either.
I don't see him starting in the second row. I could see him wearing number 19.
I don't see him in 19 Scotland at all.
No?
No. Well, like, now that Byrne is injured.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we talking full, or are we talking
injury? For Scotland.
Oh, sorry, yeah, Scotland. Sorry. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, I think with Baird, Farrell has always liked him. Even when he wasn't getting minutes for Leinster, like, Farrell always liked what Baird brought. Size, athleticism, and you can always work with guys who have that. So, like, I think I like what I saw from Baird off the bench against Italy. I think Scotland, again, will be a different kettle of fish. But I don't know. I think I can't see Farrell moving away from Conan on the bench against Scotland. I'd be shocked.
I think those back rowers will be in the next two games as long as they're fit.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they didn't.
The only thing, and I agree on the back rows, the only thing I'd say about Baird is I think with Byrne being out, it's maybe a little bit different, but Farrell has used Baird for the likes of the Italy game because he wants an athlete in there and he wants an impact at times for there. But he's tended to go away from him then afterwards. He hasn't sort of stuck with him and given him a run of games. As I say, maybe with Byrne missing, that this is his real chance to sort of to get that 19 jersey and make it his. I thought he made some really positive impacts on the game when he came on. But I think Ireland lost that sort of influence of Henderson in the tight. And it's the one thing that I think takes away from what Baird is. He's a fantastic athlete and he can make an impact. But is he going to be the guy that can give you 60, 80 minutes of doing the real donkey, the grunt work that's required, winning the rucks?
Not at the moment for me.
But he only has one start in the second row so far this season. That was against Munster. And the only time he's worn 19 was that game against Italy. So I don't think either team are seeing him as a second row option at all.
Long term.
To be honest, like, long term, yeah.
He gives you like fantastic, like offensive half lock build. Who's better? Like when you look at the qualities he brings, size, explosiveness, can carry a ball, good line out both sides of the ball. Like that's a perfect guy to spring off the bench, especially in a 6-2 split. Like
Ireland
that guy adds so much.
That often,
oh, I know. For Leinster though, but like you know when you
Leinster
look at
not
Baird
do it
for Ireland,
at all either.
I would say, I think looking at Baird, I don't know what do you think he needs to add to his game.
I think the like probably sounds too simple, but the rough and tumble side.
Yeah, like the tight side of the game.
The tight shit, yeah. Like he's fabulous ball in hand, really quick, really good runner, etc. Good defensively, but I mean, like when it comes to an arm wrestle with South Africa, who do you want?
I suppose that's the standard, really, isn't it? Like you're looking for like if you could make a choice between you can either have Ian Henderson in the second row or Ryan Baird to start against South Africa.
Ian Henderson all day.
Ian Henderson every day.
Yeah,
all day, twice on Sundays.
And that's obviously because of the opposition in front of him as well. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, I just think Henderson is a more physical player than Baird. And I don't think that's unfair to say.
I would say, I think you could say with Baird, he's a more explosive athlete
than
100%. Henderson.
Yeah.
But I think Henderson is a better tight forward. And you fucking need those guys every now and then.
Sometimes it just gets into an arm wrestle and you just need to slug it out. It's as simple as that.
By the way, I'm wearing an Irish IRFU top.
Mm.
And there's oh, I'm wearing a French one.
Yep.
French one, yeah.
I too am wearing an IRFU top that I purchased. I did not get it for free. Thanks, IRFU. But Tom always seems to comment on our clothes. Do you ever notice that on?
He does.
But
I don't know whether it's.
But I'm very past remarkable though. That's the thing. That's the thing with me. Very past remarkable. Oh, do you know what I saw today? When I was out walking around, shitting a pony.
Yeah.
Just wandering around.
Oh, sure. Grass, just a normal pony, just a long way away.
No, well, it's, I see. I'm used to seeing things that are like and thinking, is this normal size for a guy as big as me? But no, this was a real shitting pony.
I remember being in Argentina. Years ago, about 7 years ago, and like that, there was a Shetland pony, and it was all done up, whatever, with ribbons and whatever. And this woman was like, "Come get your picture taken with the Shetland pony, or with this lovely horse." And I was like, "No, like I don't want it, you know." And she was like, "Oh, you only see these animals in Argentina." And I was like, "I saw one in Roxborough, 2 weeks ago. Were you going out of it?" Like, no, you don't.
These animals only exist here. It's like.
She didn't know where Roxborough was. I was like, oh, I'm not going to explain it.
I felt an urge. I felt an urge to jump up on the back of that Shetland pony today. A primal urge.
Your feet probably kind of touch the ground, man.
And scurry around with him.
Did it feel nice finally seeing what is meant to be a large animal, but, you know, your size? Was that nice?
I'm looking down. I see all these animals here, and I'm just thinking, oh, is that a small sized animal over there? And just like, no, that's a gorilla. that's a gorilla you're looking
that's
at there.
That's a baby gorilla.
Like, I see that. It's okay. That's a silverback gorilla, whatever. That's a very small animal to me. I'm looking down at them thinking, Interesting. I thought these gorillas would be bigger.
Saw a giraffe last week. Thought it was a goat.
So it's like, this is a giraffe? Oh, I guess it's tall.
It's only a goat.
He's like, yeah, I guess it's tall. Kind of tall, I suppose.
If we're talking funny stories, one of the lads I went to Italy with, I don't know if I mentioned I was in Italy, but he said he likes to use his passport card instead of his passport to see if they ever pull him up, right? And he was like, I use it all the time and they never pull me up on it. Literally getting on the flight to go, your one's like, no, I'm not taking this. And he was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Here's my passport. He sent on a picture of his passport card today. It's about 2 weeks out of date. I don't know why I felt like telling that story, but I did.
I heard the potential passport fraud there and just fucking made me angry at the idea of it.
Do you hate passport fraud?
I hate it.
Is that what burns your biscuits?
I despise it. Makes me mad.
Well, luckily it wasn't, and in the end he had a passport, so...
That's what kind of just stopped me from just throwing this mic at the wall here.
We avoided a rage out there, Owen. I'm so sorry. I didn't see that coming. What can I say?
I'm raging by.
We'll cover off the rest of the Six Nations games. England beat Wales 24-10 in an absolute bore fest.
Was it 24-10? I didn't even know the score. I just knew 1-1.
I had no idea the score either. I just knew England won.
Yeah. Why did you just copy what I say exactly there? Like?
That was a dire game.
How do you know if you didn't see it?
I did see it.
You said you didn't see it.
Oh, I did see it. I just didn't know the score.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. Like, there seems to be a particularly heady brand of woe surrounding Wales at the moment.
They registered, England got 8 clean breaks though, which is the same that they registered in last season's games against Scotland, Wales, Ireland and France. Have you frozen or
No, we're just in shock at that stat.
It's a nice stat for you there, isn't it?
But like, you know what bothers me, right? When I'm watching games like this and commentators are moaning about how shit the game is when you're watching it. I would have made an exception from my disdain for doing that for this game because it just felt like the most dour game that you could watch on a Saturday.
I also don't think commentators should be allowed to do that though because A, they're selling the product and like they flat out just should be selling the product. But also B, if it was my main job to just go watch rugby and talk about it, I would be ecstatic.
Yeah, it's just like, so, I mean, we regardless, are privileged to be here.
It could be the shittest game ever, but you're paying me just to watch this and talk about it. Like, no problem.
That's why I like Mark Robson. Like, he will bullshit away at you any game. And he's like fucking happy as Larry to be there. And it's like, do you know what? I like listening to this guy because he's fucking enjoying himself there. But like, lads you'd see at these games looking dour as fuck at the games. Miserable.
I think a lot of that, certainly on Irish television, goes back to the days of George Hook and fucking Brent Pope.
No, it's like
you had to have your cheaper version of Dunphy and Giles. And you had to have the sort of the curmudgeon there who would say, oh, this is rubbish and this is terrible. And someone else who would actually give a bit of analysis.
Excellent running rugby. It's like, oh God, shut up. And I've just been trying to duplicate that ever since. Just like, shut up, please. Please.
And I think ever since, Irish television has insisted that at least one person on the panel has to be dour.
Has to be dour and moaning.
Yeah. It's almost written into the contracts.
And like, I what do you think is going to happen with Wales long term? Like, it seems like things are real fucking shit there at the moment.
Didn't their clubs today say that they're not going to vote in favour of a reform? Or am I making that up? One second now.
I saw Cardiff, by the way, actually. Cardiff, there was a thing today saying that they were worried that they wouldn't have the funds to have a 40-man squad next season and not have enough coaches.
I saw at least 12 players were offered $30,000 contracts.
Good God. No, there's nothing wrong with being paid $30,000 a year.
No, but nothing wrong. There is when you're getting an 80-something%
an 80% pay cut.
That's
a problem.
Yeah.
Especially when you're in an elite level collision sport. Like for $30,000, like no. That just doesn't work if you're a guy who's got a mortgage and a family. You just can't make that work.
Simple thing in Wales is they need to get the amateur clubs out of the decision making for a professional organization.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. You get that done. I think they're probably with their money worries, unless something drastic happens and they get a sudden lottery win or someone comes in. I think they're probably looking to try and cut it down maybe to two pro teams, try a similar system to Scotland.
I saw it there. It's actually Welsh Rugby. It's Wales Online. And they were saying that Welsh rugby clubs have made a move against the WRU's governance changes. So, I mean, essentially reading in between the lines. Sorry, I was just scanning it there quickly. It almost looks like there will be, 9 community game directors? So, yeah, I don't know. It just seems like there's probably a lot of people there who want to get on that gravy train before changes come, which would not allow them to get on said gravy train.
And you're basically asking those people to go, do you think you should be allowed on the gravy train? Yes or no? And you're kind of saying, you're kind of expecting these people to go, do you know what? I've had enough gravy. I've had all the gravy I could ever need. I'm stepping off this right now. But they don't. Like, they're not going to do this because it's worked really well, I think, for the most part. Because somebody must be making money over there with the money they make in the Millennium Stadium or Principality, whatever else. Somebody's making money. It's just not the regions or the players.
That's it. It's going somewhere. It's not been managed very well. They're going to have to cut the play. I don't see, based on the numbers they're discussing at the moment, I don't see how they can have four regions next year.
No, I can't see it. But with the money, if you can't run I think if you have 40 pros in the URC level games, that's not safe for whoever you bring up at, you know, if you've got even two or three injuries, all of a sudden you're thinking, who the fuck are we bringing in here? Like,
well, it's two or three injuries. You have your call ups, you have your rest periods. Like,
can't work.
Do you know what I mean? Is it a case of if you just hang around outside the stadium long enough with a gear bag, they'd be like, okay, you're up. Take a ticket. You're getting a
get
game.
In there.
you pull a ticket at the start of the season. When
get
your
in the game
comes up, you get a game.
And you're like, where am I starting? Well, we actually need you a tight hit. It's like,
My hamstring's just acting up again. Oh my God.
The principality goes, seat number 42.
And everybody's
just
like,
could you make your way to the dressing room?
You make your way to the dressing room, please.
Yeah. And you have to sign the sort of the waiver and declare that you have your own private health insurance.
And the waiver has like all these kind of skulls and crossbones on it. And you're just like, should I be signing this? It's all in Welsh. Just like, just sign it.
There's a guy in a closet just peeping out. Don't do it. Don't do it.
No, that's the guy that's been let out on the stretcher.
Should we be making fun of this? I don't know. We definitely shouldn't, probably. I don't know. It's humor.
We should.
Move on to Scotland, France.
France won 32-21. France 19-0 up. A couple of red cards. And then Scotland make a comeback.
Do you want a quick statistic?
Go on, give us the...
Go on.
No, this is thanks to... This is thanks to Russ Petty, but I saw it after the match and I couldn't believe it. 24% of Six Nations red cards have been given out in the 4 Scotland versus France games since 2020.
Jeez, that's fucking injured.
So nearly to just shy of a quarter of all Six Nations red cards have been given
in the last four games between Scotland and France. Isn't that wild?
And how many of them have been given to Mohamed Hawass?
Well, two anyway. So wait, would that mean... No, wait, no, sorry. I thought it was just... So if you take... Oh, yeah. No, sorry. My maths are wrong there. I wish... Do you want to come... Do you want... Can I go do the math, Tom? And you just team me up for that joke again or that little statistic? Because I know he got two, but I don't know how many red cards there were.
We'll circle around it there. I'll see you working on your calculator there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I think if you're Mohamed Hawass, I think you'd look at... You'd go, do you know what? If I'm going to get a second red card, I'm going to box somebody in the face again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be worth it. You've got to throw a good headbutt from at least 3 feet away. Catch him clean, you know?
It's like I was kind of, I missed it. And like when herself said, there's been another red card in the game. And like she said, it was their tight hit prop. And I was like a bit like Scooby-Doo. I was just like, what?
Whoa.
I'm back.
Oh, so okay, here we go.
There has been 17 red cards in the Six Nations. He has gotten two of them. So he has gotten 11% of... So he's gotten 11% of the red cards in the Six Nations in the last 3 years. So in just the last 3 years, he has gotten 11% of the red cards shown in the Six Nations.
He's like the French Thomas Slovenia, is he?
That's incredible.
Thomas Lavini would be trying to get that guy in a Zoom, trying to go, how did you get those numbers? The efficiency. Get on a Zoom, jump on a Zoom with me there, boy.
Imagine you said to him, like, how many times you played against Scotland? Twice. Oh, geez, there must have been two tough games. I don't know. I was sent off very early
in
40 minutes in total. And you'd be like, hang on. Why? Oh, I've got two red cards. Yeah. What?
I don't know. I think the first one he did against Scotland, if I'm going to be judging which red card was funnier, I think when he punched Jamie Ritchie in the face and made Jamie Ritchie look 80 years of age in that still, I think that was probably funnier than what happened with getting the red card here.
Well, I don't think the red card in this game was in any way funny. Like, can't do what he did at all. But the Jamie Ritchie punch, what made me think that's kind of funny, if funny is the right word, is the fact it's just in plain open day, just... Two guys standing
trying
up.
To be subtle about it.
There's not even a melee around the rant, and he's just like, "Pop, you're down."
Just punch him when a scrum goes down, like normal people.
Yeah, when nobody's watching. So there you
good go. Game though. I thought Finn Russell was both good and bad here.
What I love about him being good and bad.
That's what Finn always gives you.
Yeah, and what I love about him being good and bad is he shrugs off the bad.
He doesn't give a fuck about the bad.
Couldn't care less. Just gives a little smile going, did you see what I tried to do there?
See that? Fucked it up. Hey, we're right back on the hearth, baby.
But you rest you rest assured, I'm going to do it again.
I'm going to do it again, baby.
But I think that's the mindset of an elite sports person. Like, it's that you go in and you step up to the next time and you're not thinking about the bad thing that just happened, the mistake that you made. It's like, I can fucking do anything.
Yeah, do you know what's happening here?
100%. 100%.
Do you know what's happening here? We're offloading this fucking ball. That's what's happening. Get into it. Because it's happening, baby. Run that trail line, you idiot.
You can almost imagine like Finn Russell turning to his 12 or 13 and going like, what are we doing next? And they go, I don't know. And he goes, oh, fuck, I don't know either. We're going to do
Let's go.
guess we'll find out when the ball leaves my hands, huh?
Yeah. We're going to find out very soon. Finn, what's the call? Oh, we're going to find out.
We're going to find out. Stay wiry. Watch my eyebrows.
But I love
that. Good. I thought Scotland played well, though. You look overall. Thought they did enough there for Ireland to be concerned. Going to Murrayfield.
Just 19 points was too much for them to come back. Mm. That's all it was.
That's a stinker of a start.
Yeah.
I think not that Ireland will be played the same way, but I think the way the Italians played, the Scots can replicate it and look to try and flood the sort of the 13-11 channel, particularly. I think they have the players that can sort of do that and potentially look to cause Ireland problems or try to cause Ireland problems in that same area. Whether they get the whether with the personnel changes, they'll get the same sort of return as the Italians did, I don't know. But I reckon they might try something similar to that.
I think they've got a better 10, 12, 13 than Italy do as well. So, like, they have a game, I think, that can hurt Ireland. I suppose it's dependent on personnel as well. But anything can happen, I think. Scotland at home in Murrayfield, hot crowd. They've still got a Six Nations to play for, you know? Like, they'll be more than backing their chances here.
Yeah.
That's going to be a ding-dong of a game, that one.
I think if Ireland can win the forwards battle, that'll go a long way towards it. If Scotland start getting any sort of parity, I think it becomes a much tighter game than would be expected.
Especially with Duane van der Merwe. Like I said, Lee, yeah. It's like a fucking child's drawing of what a rugby player looks like. Just absolutely insane, this guy.
Johnny Bravo on the wing there.
Just mad, like. Just give him the ball. What's the reset option? Duane. Hit him there.
Like when just keeps going. When you're under 10s and you have one massive player, just get the ball to Duhan.
Just give it to Duhan there. That's our strike play here. We just draw it up on the board and it's just like Duhan's face. just pass it to this guy here.
If you can't that do it, there. If you can't do it, Duhan can. Not even rhymes.
The guy who looks like Captain America? Pass it to that guy. That's the guy we want him to have the ball. Okay.
We'll move on then to some of the URC action. It was a game on Saturday lunchtime. Sharks 23, Ulster 31. Huge win for Ulster down in South Africa. Some really good performances, actually. Harry Sheridan really stood out, I thought, for Ulster. Had a big game, physicality, carried well. John Cooney, again, kicked the points for them, kept them going, kept the tempo there. And it separated Ulster, I think, enough that they're sort of guaranteed top three based on this. It was a big decision for them to go down to South Africa and leave behind a couple of their top players. They left behind Doak, Burns, etc., who weren't involved with Ireland. Still got the win out of it, and I think they've put themselves into a really cemented position now in the top four that they shouldn't drop out of. I think this was, if they had lost this game, they were still very much on a slippery slope. But I think this has turned it for them. But for me, the biggest takeaway from this game was that the Sharks were, without their internationals, admittedly, were absolutely piss poor. I have not seen a team this badly coached and integrated for a long while. This was like, at least when Zebra turn up, they actually play a bit like a team, but they're underpowered. This was a physically strong team that looked like they'd met in the car park beforehand.
Halfback seems like it's a big problem for the Sharks. Not because of ability. Like, not because of ability. Like, they've got good players there. But it just seems that there's a disconnect between what they're capable of playing through the forwards, and they've got good backs as well. Like, it'll be a different proposition when Munster are playing them in the European Cup, I suppose. But, like, there was stuff there for Munster to look at and go, do you know, like, if this is their disconnect down the squad, you know, like, I think that there's certainly a chance there. But Ulster did very well. Like, Ulster looked like a very well fucking coached crew down there and won the game comfortably. Like,
I think with the Sharks, what stood out for me was the fact that individually they looked powerful. But when it came to collective things like mauls and things like that, even defensively.
Very individual.
Exactly. There was nothing there. Even in attack, it was almost like ship the ball onto someone else and hope that he can do something magical. There was very little in terms of, and one of the other one that stood out was their maul work. Because I thought on both sides of the maul, Ulster dealt with them without any problems. The Ulster attacking maul, particularly off the line-out, was good. And defensively, they just stopped them dead. Gave the Sharks no platform to play off.
I didn't see the game.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know if I mentioned. I was away. I was away for the weekend.
Oh, you were Rome?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, actually, yeah, I tipped over to Rome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rome the City.
What's the other game you have to cover? Looking, because I missed, I believe, half this podcast.
Not quite. That was the only other game that was on.
Oh, okay.
So we'll look at the previews then for this week coming up. So Friday night, we'll start with what will be the big game of the night, of the weekend, sorry, is Munster Scarlets.
You can say that's the biggest game of the weekend without saying the other three games are going to be the biggest game of the weekend as well. That's how that works.
Yeah, come on. Nope. Come on.
That's how this works.
I am convinced RG is going to start and that Munster are going to win. I'm just laying it out, Ernie.
Scarlets have no one released, do they?
No, they don't. No. But that said, they've been playing really well.
They have been playing well.
Six,
but this is main event Munster we're talking about here.
Yeah. What is it? Scarlets won 6 on the bounce. Munster have won 8 of their last 9 or something, I think it is. New York City. Munster have Crowley, Salanoa, Coombs back. RG likely to be back and potentially starting.
I'd love to see RG on the bench. I'd love to see him getting 10, 15 minutes at the end. Big reception coming off the field. Score. A hat trick. I'm a simple man. I'm just looking for just small little things here. And
he's going to score a try from behind his own posts. He's going
to do the same. To do the same the week after against Glasgow. And allow me to tear up on the radio. Because I will.
That game's in Cork, isn't it?
Glasgow?
No. The Scarlets game.
Scarlets game is in Cork. It's a much good park.
Yeah. I'm back in Munster there anyway, because I said I would back them to the end of the season. So
yeah,
I'm going to continue that, but also I just think they're going to win this game. I know Scarlets are all the way, well, but no one released. Munster have a pretty strong squad to call up from. It's at home. Well, it's in the second home of Cork. Should just be Limerick all the way. Make my life an awful lot easier, but Whatever. I'll deal with it.
Cork accent is beautiful. It's musical.
I'm not taking it.
People hear it and they're just like,
here we go.
Is there someone singing?
We're off about Cork.
I'm like, sorry, that's just my accent. Sorry. You taught that because it's such a beautiful accent. But people are jealous. I'm used to it. Especially up here.
I don't like missing a chance to rag on Cork, but no. I do think it's going to be...
Cork is a beautiful place.
Oh, shut up.
Heaven. It is fucking brilliant is what it is. Yes, I am paid by Cork, the Republic of Cork, to promote Cork at all times.
Oh, I'm going to get sick.
You brought this on yourself. Right, so that's three for Cork and 3 for Munster.
Wash your mouth out. Oh, hang on. Did Tom Stewart score a try for Ulster at the weekend?
It doesn't matter because we never placed a bet on that to get your point back, did we?
No, I was just hoping you wouldn't know that. Yeah. Doesn't matter, I'm still really far ahead. Anyway, what's next? The other game of the weekend, is it?
Other game of the weekend is Edinburgh against Leinster on Saturday evening. Jason Jenkins is back. He came through the previous game against the Dragons. Frawley stepping up in training. He's close to a return. But Joe McCarthy is out for 2 months.
Can't see that. You young player doing well.
Yeah, riding a real crest of a wave. It's a shame.
It's that could be his World Cup hopes. You know, he would have been an outside chance of that squad, the wider squad. So I think that potentially hits him there. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll talk about the match first and then we'll talk about Leo's new deal afterwards. Edinburgh against Leinster Saturday evening, who are we going for?
Leinster.
Do I have to ask?
No. Leinster. Edinburgh haven't been doing great. I mean, Edinburgh interior are quite a good side, but they haven't been playing well as of late. And I think Leinster should do the business here. And what I'm sure will be a thrilling game.
Will be an excellent game, full of excellent players.
Hang on a second here. No one suggested that there weren't excellent players playing for Leinster.
Fantastic players.
Fabulous players.
Fabulous. Not for the birds.
Took me 3 goes there to get that adjective. I couldn't remember the word fabulous. So I just kept talking.
Sublime.
Some people would stay quiet when they can't think of something. I just kept going.
Just keep talking. Voice. Just talk your way through it.
Yeah.
I've been doing that for years.
The other news out of Leinster this week has been that Leo Cullen has signed a new 2-year deal, keeping him there. I think it's just the replacement there for Lancaster that has to be really added to the team.
Did I see Leon McDonald mentioned?
He was linked with it. I've heard his name around the murky corridors of the rugby chat underworld.
I think, yeah.
His name around.
I think, but Leo Cullen said, or seemed to play down some of those rumours. I think he's also been linked with taking over, is it Scotland, after the World Cup?
Yeah, it's a tough time to go looking for a coach, to be honest, because everybody's kind of thinking there's going to be a flux job-wise in the test game after the World Cup, so it's tough to kind of get people on contract. I think what Leinster might do is promote internally. That's typically worked well for Leinster before. And Leo Cullen is the fucking heart and soul and guts of that team, really, you know. But they need to get a kind of on-field guy alongside him. Not that he's not a bad on-field coach, but I think what Stuart Lancaster brought was just the complexity and the depth of his coaching intellect is going to be very hard to replace, like for like. And especially as they seem to imply that there's going to be other guys who won't be at Leinster next year. So there could be a need for that stability, like Leo Cullen. I mean, see, he must be up there. I mean, I think Joe Schmidt is still one of the most successful provincial coaches of all time, but Leo Cullen's right up there as well. 10 years he's going to be in the job? So I'm going.
This is 10. That's some going. Really is. Moving on then to Saturday night, we have Dragons against Connacht. News this week from Connacht. Well, Pete Wilkins, we talked a little bit about. He got the head coach gig last week. Collie Tucker is confirmed as an assistant coach. He's looking after the scrum and contact work currently. And then player news, Finley Beatham is confirmed out for the rest of the Six Nations and probably longer. I'd be surprised if he was back before.
Shocked he played on.
Yeah.
Against Italy. Shocked when he went down holding his knee like that. It's like, get him off the field.
That's like amateur level. Someone comes out with a magic sponge and a bit of tape and it's like, you'd be grand. Off you go, lads.
But Connacht, I don't know, they should win this. They've been going well.
I'm going to just say this. If Connacht want to reach knockouts, Dragons away should not be an issue here. I phrased that probably poorly. Sorry, let me go again. Like, if Connacht are, which they are, looking to, you know, really push on and finish the season on a high, etc., this Dragons game should be, unlike Zebre, which they allowed Zebre into it, etc., this should be kind of just putting Dragons to bed and, you know, dusting off their hands at halftime, saying, we're going to go out and play the second half now, whatever, but we're talking winning Bowden's point, Romeo done. That's the way I see it anyway.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's the... If they want to get that top eight, and they probably have to finish top seven, as we said, I think eight is achievable for them, but this is a must-win game.
Yeah.
Must-win for them. The other news then this evening with Connacht is Kieran Marmion has it's been announced he's leaving and he's joining Bristol for next season.
It's a good move for him.
It's a good move for Marmion. I think the talk is that Connacht offered him a contract. It wasn't of the length that he wanted and the security that he needed on it. So he's chosen to go to Bristol on that. Again, I wouldn't blame any player in current circumstances looking for that level of security. He's been a good servant for Connacht. I think they have in Caelan Blade, they have a decent replacement, and they also have Young Devine coming up through the ranks, who's meant to be highly rated. So I think, you know, they have decent options there, and it's just a case of, as I think Connacht will do over the coming seasons, trust the youngsters coming through and build from there.
14 years he's with Connacht now, isn't it?
14, is it? Jeez.
Yeah, like that's a lifetime. Like,
yeah,
professional sport, that is genuinely a lifetime. So, yeah, it's a class move. Go experience the Premiership, different, you know, different team, different way of life, etc. Like, go for it, enjoy it. Like, that's what it's there for.
Just to touch on
the Bealham news as well. We're really going to see just how important Tom O'Toole is in the next couple of weeks
for Ireland. Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's amazing when you think about how little Furlong has played.
Yeah,
how little rugby he has played in the last while. Tom O'Toole is going to be, as you say, really important. I think it's also going to be, based on what they've done so far, it looks like Roman Salanova seems to be next in line behind O'Toole as well.
Yeah, that's the way it would look now to me as well.
So, you know, if Furlong isn't fit or isn't available for Scotland, that's certainly an untested sort of tight head side. As good as Tom O'Toole has done in the last few games, you know, it's still, and the Scottish scrum will cause some problems. You know, they're a decent setup.
Do you know how much rugby Tadhg Furlong has played this season?
How much?
Guess the minutes. How many minutes Tadhg Furlong has played this season?
This season? Oh, I'd say it's what, but 250, maybe less than that?
73.
73?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Isn't that wild? And like, if he's fit, like, against Scotland, like, he's played five games so far. He's played 73 minutes for Leinster, I should say. He played
right.
Sorry, that's my own fault. Sorry. He also played South Africa, Fiji, and Australia, but he only went over 50 minutes in one of those games. He's played 226 altogether, but only 73 minutes for Leinster.
Not too bad. That was a good guess.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad guess. Yeah, it was not a bad guess. That's a good shout. Not a bad guess at all.
I should get an extra point for that. Cardiff against us.
Who do you think you are? Me?
Okay, this is the reason we're the cup, isn't it? I get definite extra points for this sort of stuff. Cardiff against Ulster is the last game on Saturday night. Henderson, McCluskey, and Tom Stewart released by Ireland. Gilroy and John Andrews have returned to play protocols after the Sharks game. Again, I see this as an Ulster win. I think they've been targeting this game. I think they've held Doak and Burns back. They have a few others there. I think Cardiff in a bad spot, even at home. I'm not sure Cardiff can pull anything out against this side. For me, probability lies that Ulster get another win here.
Yeah, I think so. What, Cardiff are ninth, I think. Yeah, I'm going for an Ulster win anyway, to be honest with you. The players they have released, I'm going to go with an Ulster win. Both teams, I think, have only won the last 2 and 5 games, but I just think it's going to be a stronger Ulster team than that's kind of the long and short of it, really, to be honest with it, when it comes to what I think.
And then the other news was, I suppose, the women's Six Nations squad was released today, Tuesday.
Time has lost all meaning to me this week. I genuinely haven't a clue what day.
Was that because you were away for the weekend in Rome?
Yeah, it was actually. Did someone? I wasn't actually going to bring it up again, but seeing as you did, no, like, time has just lost all meaning to me. And even I can't believe tomorrow's Thursday, which would be today if you're listening now, which for me would feel like Friday. Like, I don't know. I'm all over the place. All over the place. But back to the point, I suppose. Yeah, it was named 32 players named. And I suppose the overwhelming yet unsurprising feeling for me was the fact there's only 6 Munster players, despite back-to-back Interpro champions. But what can you do? What can you say at this stage? Like, what can we say that hasn't been said already, you know?
I think for me, the things that don't make sense in it, I think number one, and I'm not going to get into it in terms of players, because I don't have the in-depth knowledge to necessarily say whether players should or shouldn't be there. The things that surprise me in it is, number one, there's only, as you say, what is it, six players from Munster for back-to-back interprovincial champions. Does that make sense? And then secondly, there are, out of the, what is it, 32-person squad, three players are from clubs outside Dublin or abroad.
Yeah.
Three. And to me, that's the one thing that points exactly to what we said when the professional contracts came out, when everything else, the entire focus, process, planning, everything to do with women's rugby in Ireland is based about being around the M50. And if you are from anywhere further out than that, best of luck.
Yeah, pretty much, to be honest with you. And when it came out and you kind of look at the squad and you look at the numbers, you're kind of thinking to yourself exactly what we've talked about before, a lot of people have talked about before. Like, I mean, only 3 to 4 clubs, I suppose, in Ireland cater for that 10% of performance, I suppose, because there is an issue there between how women's rugby is viewed as participation and performance, and how, I suppose, they're, what's the word I'm looking for, how they're run and stuff and how they're viewed by the IRFU. But at the same time, I think performance itself isn't counted towards the selection of these squads, if that makes sense. Like, when it comes to Interpros, like, what's the point of having an Interpro series what's the point of having an Interpro series if it's meaningless?
If there's no correlation between performance in the Interpros and selection.
Yeah, like, if it's not seen as an audition, or if it's not seen as a step up, I mean, what's the point of it, like, you know? And I think you do have to ask that question. Now, players being selected from abroad, like, have at it. I've no issue with that at all. I just don't see how there is a rugby club in Dublin, there's a couple of them, who have more players than the entire province of Munster named in that squad. It just doesn't correlate with me, to be honest with you. I just don't understand how we saw those performances in the Interpros and players are not getting selected. And even when the combined provinces selection was given, I said something along the same lines, you know, Munster back-to-back champions, and a player involved in Munster replied to me privately, let's say, and said, if you don't know what to make of it, how do you think us players who are involved in it, what do you think we make of it? And you're kind of like, well, Jesus, yeah, like, surely, well, phone calls should be made, essentially. Like, players should know why you're, you know, like, there should be reasoning here given. And I think Fiona Hayes even said it. Like, she was coaching that Munster, or she is coaching that Munster team and stuff. And she also said that she doesn't understand, like, how people aren't getting selected, because it's not like they're not putting themselves forward for selection. It's not like they've said, you know, I'm not putting myself into consideration for it. It's just they're not being selected. So, I mean, take from that what you will.
I think there's a lot could blow up if the results on the pitch don't go their way. I think there's a lot that could blow up and get ugly within Irish women's rugby in Ireland. I think there's a definite pathway that the IRFU see. There's a definite way that the selection in the national squads work, and the results within the things like the Interpros don't necessarily back that up. And if the results for the Ireland team don't go right, there'll be a lot of questions asked of people, and I don't know whether they have the answers or not. But that time will come eventually. So we'll round it up there, folks. Thank you very much for listening to our ramblings and for supporting the podcast. Please do rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen, as it really helps. And also be sure to share the podcast on social media. Hope you have a good week, and the three of us will be back next week to chat again.